I'm Sydney.
And I'm Julie.
And this is Restaurant and Retail Revelations. You're listening to Restaurant and Retail Revelations, a podcast made possible by Revel Systems, the leading open cloud order management platform on the market. This podcast spotlights movers and shakers in the restaurant and retail industries, and this episode is a milestone for us. It's our 50th show.
It is hard to believe we've recorded 50 of these, and I'd like to extend a big thank you to all of the guests who have shared their revelations with us through the years. And I'll also note that today's guest is a great one for this milestone episode. We're talking to Eric Knott, Chief Operating Officer at PDQ. And for anyone unfamiliar with PDQ, the letters stand for People Dedicated to Quality. We'll share more on that later. And the brand is a growing chicken chain in the fast casual restaurant space.
Eric has years of experience in the restaurant industry and various leadership roles within it as well. So I'm excited to talk to him about what he's paying close attention to and how he and his team are preparing for what's next. Should we get right to it?
Let's do it. Here's Eric.
Eric, thank you so much for joining us on the Restaurant and Retail Revelations podcast. We are so excited to have you on the show today with us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So I'd like to kick things off with some context for our listeners. Not only are you the Chief Operating Officer for PDQ, which stands for People Dedicated to Quality, but you worked your way up the ranks at Outback Steakhouse before coming to PDQ. And I would love to hear a little bit more about the evolution of your career in restaurant leadership.
Yeah, so I cut my teeth with Outback as a 15-year-old that needed money for things like food and the important things at 15. But I started out actually bussing tables, and I fell in love with the restaurant business right from the start and decided pretty quickly that this is what I wanted to do. I was with them 12 and a half years. Did it pretty much every function that there was at that concept, whether it was in the kitchen or the front of the house. Quickly kind of rose up the ranks. My first management gig was right after I turned 18 years old as a kitchen manager for Outback. Did that for a little bit of time and then took a corporate level position that they called food tech, where I focused most of my time on kitchen operations and food over 17 restaurants at that time. And then I decided that I wanted to make my way into what they called the managing partner program. So I did some time in the front of the house, learning in the bar and wait staff, hostess. Back then we had takeaway. Did that for a brief time and then got promoted and offered an opportunity to be a managing partner with them. I spent some time doing that, running a single unit. Outback just kind of created a culture and a learning space for young adults, I guess. Not only with regards to how to manage people, how to lead people, how to grow sales, things like that. And then the founder of Outback bought a little chicken restaurant out of North Carolina. The original name was Tenders, and brought me over before we built the first PDQ. I actually opened the second location in Wesley Chapel, Florida. Did that just for a couple months. Elevated to a regional position at that time, grew the Tampa market to about 15 stores. And then, you know, the last, I guess, 4 or 5 years, started out as the VP of Ops, but then quickly was transitioned to the COO. And, you know, today we're still what I would consider a small chain, 65 locations. So we tend to wear a lot of hats. So one minute I might be in a technology meeting, the next minute I might be in a marketing meeting, the next minute training meeting, and then at the same time go visit a couple stores in that same day. So wear a lot of different hats, but enjoy it very much being involved in different disciplines of the business.
What a great success story. And I, for one, always love when we get to talk to people who are in the industry and started at the very bottom and, to your point, rose the ranks. It's kind of the only way, I think, to really, really understand the restaurant industry. So that's a great story. And Eric, in all of your roles, I know a central focus has been this concept and execution of a great guest experience. So through all these roles in hospitality, what do you think are like the most pivotal needle movers
for elevating the guest experience, in your opinion?
Well, I think you have to start by being able to listen. And I think that too many times, you know, people will try and come up with the next best idea. And the reality is that they're not the baseline consumer for that business. So I really try and spend as much time listening to the team members that work in the restaurant or the guests that come to the restaurant to give us their money for a service. And I would tell you that more than half the time, if you do a great job of listening to those two subsets or groups of people, that you probably will make really good decisions. But I think, you know, more importantly, if you have built a team that is willing to, create a safe space where they're willing to honestly contribute their thoughts and opinions to what will drive the business, whether that's a food quality aspect or might be a structure or organization or a process or a way to treat the guests or a different service model or something to try. You know, we really do test a lot. I mean, we test different ways to take care of the guests. We test different technologies. I think obviously in the last 4 years, I couldn't even count how many different technologies we've tried to use. And it's not because we're looking for something to completely alter our business. We're looking for accelerators, things that will either help us make decisions faster, help our teams stay out of the office or stop spending so much time, you know, on functions that don't necessarily service the guest or the team.
So I love that. I mean, both of those things, listening and testing, are really kind of leading with curiosity and an understanding of your target. That's a perfect way, in my opinion, to really kind of focus all the different things that you could be doing to actually end up with a quality result. So for those who know and love PDQ, a menu item that you're known for is the hand-breaded buttermilk chicken. And fortunately, it seems like there's an endless appetite for chicken. We've survived the chicken wars. We're in the midst of a hot chicken surge. And there's a chicken-focused marketplace that's competitive and honestly increasingly crowded. But with that said, there's an anecdote that I really enjoy about the opening day for PDQ's first location, where there were so many cars lined up on the road that an employee actually went outside and directed traffic with a food tray. So my question for you is, where do you believe PDQ has that competitive advantage for chicken enthusiasts and for prospective franchisees?
Well, I think that, you know, food is very trendy. So if I think back 20, 30 years, right, and just what became very popular for that, say, 10 years, we had the crazy burger time, right, where it's like, next thing you know, there's a new burger place on every corner. And then from there, it went into pizza. And then there was this crazy pizza. I mean, it was everywhere, new concepts popping up. And then, you know, there's probably a small portion with frozen yogurt and ice cream and things like that. But I think the last 10 years or so has really been a chicken craze. And it helps when you have very large competitors that drive the market and the marketplace, right? So even though some may say you're competing against, you know, Goliath, right? Like the massive of the massive, right? 1,800, 3,000 restaurants, whatever it is. But it actually helps you at some point because they are marketing that same space that you're in. And people are curious when newer brands or smaller brands come to town. So I think when you think about it holistically, a lot of people will say competition might be a deterrent for sales, but I actually think it drives more time, energy, and focus into that space. But I think, you know, for us, what we try and focus on is competing against ourselves every day. Of course, we watch what everybody else is doing, but when it comes to trying to, you know, from an actual competition standpoint, we try and compete with ourselves. And we do that by consistently challenging ourselves if we're selling the highest quality product or we're doing the right thing with the guest. And going back to that listening point, you know, we have technology that we rolled out recently that's helping us kind of aggregate all of our guest feedback and really leaning into that portion of the business. But the reality is that if we do an excellent job of executing our recipes, our food, and do that with unwavering hospitality and treat our teams right, I mean, the chicken craze won't go away, right? You'll build loyalty and people want to come back to see you because of that.
Great answer. And, you know, when you think about competing against yourself, what challenges, you know, keep you up at night when concerning restaurant operations, specifically at PDQ? Are there any major headwinds you're monitoring closely this year? And, you know, what are you guys trying to just do to be increasingly better every day?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll start with probably the first letter of our name is people. I think that's probably my number one focus, is how do I keep the team engaged? How do I keep the team happy with what we're doing as an organization? How do I provide opportunity for people so they don't look for that at another one of our competitors? And listen, I'll be the first one to tell you that if we have someone that's fully developed and ready to take on a new role and I can't provide that new role, then that's my fault. That's not their fault. So if they go out and find a better opportunity and a more advanced opportunity, I would say, then I can't blame them for that, right? So I think the first answer would be the people side of the business. So if I can keep our team happy, engaged, a fun work environment, safe work environment, and continue to provide opportunities for people, then I think that right there, the core of that, will take care of the rest of the things that we just discussed. But I do think that as technology continues to evolve, we have a responsibility to continue to have that, I guess I'll steal Sydney's word, curiosity, right? Is like, what is next? And also, you got to be careful because there's a lot of salespeople out there that will sell you something that's not, it doesn't do what they say it's going to do. So I think staying curious with technology to accelerate our performance and the data that we can consume and then make better decisions moving forward, I think is another probably hot topic, I guess, right now, and probably isn't going away anytime soon.
So we've talked about technology as a high-level concept a couple times now, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk with you about tech while we have you here. PDQ implemented Revel after you joined the company, and I'm curious to know whether you have any specific quantitative improvements or general observations that PDQ has experienced since rolling out Revel's cloud platform.
Yeah, I mean, I probably can go on for the rest of this time that we have together about that, but you know, we are probably like most, you know, we were with a legacy company that we were with for a very long time. And I think that the POS scares people because they look at it like this just massive change and this hard thing that you have to do to switch over to whether it be cloud-based or just another provider. But the reality with Revel is that my first and foremost thing that I love is that you all use Apple as the operating system. And if I go to poll my 3,000 team members today, I would tell you that probably 75%+ of them have an Apple device in their pocket, which may not seem like a big selling point, but when they're so used to operating that device and you get them onto an Apple device for the POS, it's like second nature. I mean, they picked it up. I mean, it took me a lot longer to learn how to use the system than the team members, I'll tell you that. So that's a very small piece, but I think it would go missing if we didn't talk about it, right? It is a thing. But the next I would go to probably the open API that you guys have. So a lot of companies will try and say, well, this is what we have you to offer, right? Whether it be bringing in scheduling or back office or whatever the case may be, where you guys take the approach like, we have those features and we're glad to try and help you with those if you want to use it. But we also welcome that you have relationships with other people that you might have been doing business with for a long time, and allow us to make the decision who and when we want to use someone else for something different, another discipline along the business. The other part that I really enjoy, obviously, from a financial aspect, is the cost of it, the hardware. So it was about it cost me about 30% of what I was paying previous. So I saved 70% on each restaurant with Revel. And then also by saving that, not only was that like, you know, apples to apples monetary wise, but We also built in redundancy now too. So we have several devices that we can use instead of just the one that we had previous. The last one, and like I said, I could go on probably for a little bit, but the last one is that, working with you all and then our team, we're able to build a menu design that the team members can input the information from the guest as they're ordering it. What we found kind of with our old system, and even right when we switched to Rebel, we were interrupting the guest a lot as they're ordering. So they would say, I'd like 3 crispy tenders and fries. Wait, I need to know what sauce you want before I move on to your side. So we re-engineered kind of like how the menu's designed. And now we have very much so what I would say conversational ordering, where the guest can order whatever they want, how they want, and we can grab that order right then and there, which is increased throughput specifically because our, 55 to 60% of our guests go through the drive-through, which is a speed game. So it's increased throughput and efficiency through our drive-through as well.
Well, that's all music to our ears. And what a great story of just collaboration in terms of what you've built out for conversational ordering. I'm sure that's been extremely beneficial, especially in the quick service industry. And you, Eric, you already mentioned on this call that your team's a big fan of testing. And I assume that is, especially when there's the rollout of new tech and new solutions. Can you think of an example where testing uncovered clear operational improvements that your team was able to implement?
Yes, I'll probably tell stories about both. Most recently, I'll tell you the story about our kiosks that we're deploying today, actually. We've been back and forth over the past couple of years on whether or not kiosk was the right thing for us to do. And one side of the fence would say, well, I have a kiosk in my pocket. I can order right from my phone. Why would I need a kiosk in the restaurant? My thought was that we should always just give the guest the optionality to use us however they want to use us. So I'm not saying that we should only go to kiosks and not have any people there to take the order for the guest. I'm saying they should have the option. So it took us a while to get there, but we finally did test it. And within the first week, everyone within the leadership team said, okay, so how fast can we roll these out? What we saw was that we had over 40% adoption from the guests that were coming in, which is a very big number. And then on top of that, average check size was bigger because people would order more from the kiosk. I call it the guilt feeling. So like if I'm ordering from a live person, I feel guilty that I should not order that cookie, that milkshake, put that cheese and bacon on my sandwich. But if I'm ordering from a screen, go ahead, throw all that stuff on there. And now I'm spending $16 for my meal instead of $9.99 or $10.50 or whatever the case may be. But I mean, that was a scenario where we put it in 3 restaurants and we let it test for 5 months, actually, before we made the decision on rolling that out. So that was a good, example of, from a guest standpoint, how that turned out well. And I think also, and I'm not here to promote kiosks, I promise, but I also think with kiosks, people like to use them. It's fun, right? It's like playing a game or whatever the case may be. So.
Yeah, and I love the element of choice being such a big factor that you guys were considering. We don't want to limit how a guest can experience PDQ. That's a really cool thing, and obviously the results speak for themselves that's been a really beneficial test for your team. So speaking of testing and adding things to your order, PDQ has offered some really fun menu innovations with limited time offers through the years. So a couple that I can think of are spicy chicken tenders, the waffle fry shake. How does your team approach menu innovation? And can you give us any sneak previews into menu offerings in the works?
Yeah, so this one is a little bit of a push-pull situation, right? So we have someone in charge of culinary, and our founders are very culinary-driven. So they're always pushing us to find latest trends, right? Something that could be popular, exciting, right? But at the same time, we have to be able to execute that and deliver that guest experience without bloating our menu and having too much there. So it's a constant push and pull. I will tell you that we try and live with our core products. So we don't go out and bring in a different protein or something like that. We try and be very creative with the current products we have. So tenders are attached to 70% of our checks, which is a large number, right? So it's like, how can we, what can we do different with the tenders without, you know, creating some level of complexity that affects the other 90% of people that order our core products? So just recently, actually a month and a half ago, we rolled out our tossed tenders and boneless wing campaign. It's going very well. But again, that's something where we just take products we already have and put a twist to them. You mentioned the waffle fry shake. So we do have fun with some things, right? So that's actually only one day a year we do that. It's on National Fry Day. So it's very ironic, though, and shocking to me how many people actually ordered a milkshake with French fries in it. I mean, it baffles me. I guess that salty sweet thing. But so I guess where I'm headed, though, is we try and balance kind of what the guest would want without creating too much complexity within the organization. And then also have some fun stuff in there, too, right? The team enjoys to have some, and it's not a long period of time. It's that one day, right? So it's not something to have to do day in and day out. I will tell you that right now, you said sneak peek. We are looking at some beverage ideation, something we haven't done a lot in the past. We've definitely played around with milkshakes, and we used to do some fun things, you know, in the early days where a team member could submit a recipe for a fun shake. And if we selected it, put on the menu, they would get claimed for it and there was some type of compensation. But I think that what we're seeing in the industry is we're seeing a lot of these snack drink situations, right? There's companies out there, I'm not going to give them a shameless plug on this, but there's companies out there today that are, their whole premise is around iced coffees and, you know, sodas that have different flavors in them and things like that. So we do have two different tests going on right now. One that's based around sodas and then one that's based around iced coffees and energy drinks and frozen lemonades and things like that. So not sure exactly where that's going to go. We're seeing very good results so far through the test, but that's kind of, I think, up next for us.
Yeah, and as a consumer, I love when I know a brand is so intentional about their menu. It's refreshing to know that so much research goes into every menu item. So that was a great backstory into how you guys develop your menu. And switching gears a little bit here, I want to talk about something I know your team understands really well, which is philanthropy and giving back. It's my understanding that PDQ has given over $6 million in monetary and in-kind donations to local charities, schools, organizations, all since the brand's inception, which is really incredible. And an area where PDQ and Revel have a little bit of overlap is our partnership with the Giving Kitchen, which is a nonprofit that helps food service workers in crisis. And we're really proud to be an annual corporate sponsor of the Giving Kitchen. And I know your team is exploring ways that you can get more involved and also offer the service to your employees. So can you share more about that connection and just how the program is going to date?
Yeah, so I'll start with the first part of that. The you know, our concept was predicated and built on being involved with the community, right? Our internal motto is, how do we improve the lives of our guest, team members, and community? Like, that is our focus, right? So we do so much and really a lot of different things within the community, whether that it could be something with school sports, it could be schools, could be churches, could be large organizations. Boys, I was just at a Boys and Girls Club golf event this past Monday. So from a corporate standpoint, we tend to work with the larger organizations. And then what we do is employ our operators at the store level to get more grassroots, you know, in the community, right? It's like, how can we be involved and how can we work as partners to raise funds for people that need those? And right, it could be anything, like I said, from a charitable donation all the way up to like a school sponsorship, et cetera. And really, it benefits us only because we're able to get out there and let people know that we care. And at the end of the day, they come back to the restaurant so much, you know, that it's almost, I truly think it's a partnership, right? And even through COVID, I can remember a time where the community actually threw an event for us on a day, So they posted all over the local Facebook page, like, let's go out and support PDQ. They've supported us for the last several years. I know that this is a hard time for restaurants, et cetera. So they're there for us just as much as we are for them. Now, the Giving Kitchen, I was actually introduced by Rebel, and I'm very thankful for that. You know, as a smaller organization, sometimes it becomes very difficult to support, you know, crisis situations that happen for our team members. But we actually already have had several members of our team need help and support, and the Giving Kitchen has been there for them. And I love the organization because it is solely focused on food service workers, and you don't have very many out there that do that. And what we try and do now, what I'm trying to do and the organization is trying to really be a cheerleader to let everyone know about who the Giving Kitchen are. So whether that is what they're about, where they started, how to get involved. A lot of peers of mine in the restaurant, somewhere over here, I have my little team Heidi that I wear around too as well. But the other component too is that I've tried to connect the Giving Kitchen with as many vendors as possible as well, because I think that they have a responsibility, right? They're selling food and services to majority of food service workers to then serve. So as many connections as I can make essentially is really ultimately my goal right now, and get the word out there.
It is. It's such a fantastic organization, and it's really surprising given the appetite we have for eating out as a country that we don't have more in place to support the very people in food service. I agree with you. I think it's such a cool mission. I think it's very important, and I'm thrilled that we have a partner in PDQ and in you to help us champion that cause and get the word out.
And two small facts about that, by the way, you talk about food service. We are going to eclipse $3 trillion in sales this year as a business, right? In a food service business. The other thing is we are number two in the country from an employment standpoint, only following the U.S. government.
So huge.
Massive.
Huge group of people, a huge impact potential, and just a gap that we've been needing to address for quite some time. So I love just closing on an uplifting note. So as we come to the conclusion of today's conversation, the last thing I want to make sure is, if there's anything that we did not ask you about today that you want to make sure we share with our listeners, that we give you that opportunity to share.
No, I think that you guys covered a lot of ground today. But I think that if anyone's going to take anything, right, it's the testing and the team member guest focus, really. I mean, I think that solves a lot of problems, right? Don't be afraid to test things. Don't let those tests go on too long, because then you can get inundated with these tests that are out there. And then, support your team, support your guests, support Giving Kitchen.
I love it. Well, Eric, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. And we are looking forward to continued partnership moving forward.
No, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
There you have it. A lot of listening, a bit of testing, a touch of curiosity, and a delicious yet focused menu seems to be a great recipe for restaurant success. And of course, you can't forget to take care of your people.
That's spot on, Julie. It was such a treat talking with Eric, and I'm a huge fan of how he and his team approach hospitality and community relationships. We'll have to watch for those drink specials when they go live as well.
Absolutely. Drink specials for the win. And as we close things out for our 50th episode, I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in, especially those who have been with us from the very start. And to make sure you never miss new podcast content, you can like and subscribe to Restaurant and Retail Revelations on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back soon with even more revelations.